And we are back at it again. Pitch Invasion Podcast. This is episode 35. I am Zao Moloi, standing in for Lwazi Siqubu. Man, what a weekend.
36. That's how deep we're in.
Before we get carried away, I am with...
Hurting, wounded, in need of love, Xola Makwazi.
And... back on top of the table.
Mecca
in the
game. Man City are going to win.
As of 12 p.m. The 6th of May. Xola, you've had a... You're hurting, you're wounded. Arsenal, one side. That your team is, I think you probably say trash at your angriest. Orlando Pirates. Oh, you know, when I think of the Orlando Pirates results against Cape Town City FC... If there was Arsenal fan TV outside and DT was like, you've got a bunch of bottlers out there.
No, look, I think in Pirates' circumstance, I don't think they bottled it. Look, they came from a goal down and eventually went 2-1 up. And, you know, they had to park the bus at some point because, you know, the result was there. Yeah. And, you know, winning at Cape Town City has never been easy for Pirates. I think, you know, they've got 2 draws, 2 losses there in all competitions. So... it's not easy. Plus, you know, you're up against Benny McCarthy, who, in some way, as brief as it was at Pirates, you know, has a bit of a legacy at Pirates. Yeah. I mean, with the treble and all of that. So he also has a bit of an axe to grind, because why would he want to, you know, give Pirates any favors? Mm. So,
I mean, you see, he said in the interview, like, I'm loyal to the team I'm either coaching or I'm playing for.
Exactly. So. And, you know, he's got interests of his own. He was also within a shout of the title at some point. Mm. And there's also continental football on the line. So he's playing for his own interests. But I thought, you know, the guys really played well. I mean, coming from a goal down is not easy at any level, and especially a game of this intensity. You know, they were just unlucky, to be honest to you. And, you know, Wayne Sanderland had to come up with some really, really good saves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, credit, like I said, to the team, because they withstood so much pressure from Cape Town City. I mean, at some point, Pirates could have easily been 3-0 down within the first 10 minutes of the game. Yeah. And for them to show that determination and just to have that sort of composure to collect themselves and go get the equalizer and eventually take the lead, it says a lot about this current Pirates team and the way Micho set up the team, which is something I've said the whole season, that Micho has set up the team, you know, to go on the front foot. And I really like that. And that's what I saw from Pirates. So, look, obviously Sundowns have a game in hand. And, I mean, they had 4 games in hand and drew all 4 of those games.
Yeah.
So, you know, who's to say they're going to win this next game? And, you know, then you look at the last game. It's literally a showdown. I've got tickets. We're painting Orlando Stadium black.
I'm going. Okay.
The last game of the season. Hopefully Sundowns would have slipped up. I think the next game is against Golden Arrows. And
then they have Free State Stars.
Who also themselves will be hungry to survive. So that's not going to be easy.
It's not a given. Emeka, Michu says... pretty much the mathematics is not really in their favor. So they're on 54 points, Sundowns are 53, but obviously that game in hand. Do you agree? Is it a foregone conclusion that Sundowns are gonna wrap this up?
Look, we've seen...
and they're out of the CAF Champions League, so...
we've seen some incredible scenarios in this title race. We've seen it not just in South Africa, we've seen it in Europe, we've seen it everywhere. Teams right now, whether they've survived relegation or they're fighting relegation, the final games mean so much. They come to a point where they kind of respect their fans, and they don't want to be seen to just give in easily. They want to win every game, and they want to go out of the season, you know, with some good results. So I've always said that a game in hand means nothing unless you win them. So Sundowns have got their work cut out. The good thing for them is that they know that they're out of the running for the second star that we saw.
Thank God.
Give them. Maybe we jinxed them. I don't know. but you know, everyone expected them to win, and they couldn't find a goal. So that could be a pointer, because, you know, I remember speaking to Shukrani, who's the media officer, during the week, and saying, you know, you beat Al Ahly 5-0. Can you get 5 against Wydad Casablanca? And can they win? Because the Pirates has a goal advantage against them as well. So even if they don't win, and they get to a point where it's down to goal difference. So, for Sundowns, they just have to go win those 2 games. And it's not going to be easy. For me, I think it's still going to go to the wire to go to the last game. And then we'll see what happens at the end of the day.
I mean, like, for me, though, I'm looking at... So Sundowns are out of the CAF Champions League. But against Arrows, Sundowns have won the last five. They haven't lost to Arrows since 2015. You look at Free State Stars. The last time Sundowns lost to Free State Stars was 2011.
The problem is that they don't have to lose to lose to them.
Yeah, but it's...
Can they win? Because
it's a case for me. I'm seeing, like, these are games that... And a Sundowns B team can win.
They had a lot of... Sundowns had a lot of games in hand.
Yeah.
And they drew all of them. And that's what put them in... I mean, they should have wrapped up this league title long ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, you know, until they win those games, it's still what it is. It's still a very wide open race. And we just have to stop looking at, oh, no, this team can win. We've seen some really, really crazy results and some shocking results. I mean, Cape Town City, whether they won, if they won the game against Paris over the weekend, doesn't put them into the running for the league title.
No, it doesn't.
But spoilers, but it's still, it's not about spoilers. They have to get a result.
Yeah.
People who are trying to win are looking for a favor. Mm. You know, it's not going to happen.
Did you see that? You've got to
earn it.
Yeah.
You've got to earn it. And that's what we've seen. It's what I've enjoyed about this season, not just here, but everywhere. It's just the fact that for once, you have teams digging in there and saying, we've got to get a result.
Mm. One minor blemish, you know, about the season for me is, you know, the conclusion of the Sundowns saga with Wayne Arendse that has taken, you know, a baby could have been had in that period that they took that long, right? And, you know, a matter happened August last year, gets sorted out in April, you know, what's that, 8 months or so, okay? And I'm looking at it this way. Sundowns only get fined, they don't get docked points. If the rule says that is what the outcome should be, can I just see those rules? At least, can I see the rules that say if a team fields an ineligible player, if you know whether the player has been suspended, whether the player is not on the team sheet, whatever that rule is, I just would like that transparency to at least see what the rule actually states. Because it's funny how they always give out, you know, rule whatever, whatever point, whatever slash B, you know, whenever somebody has been. Let's say maybe a team has faced a disciplinary hearing because of crowd violence. I mean, we saw Bloemfontein Celtic get dealt with accordingly, right? When they had they failed to provide adequate security against Cape Town City. So there was a rule there. The rule said X, Y, Z. You see when players get suspended for disciplinary hearings and so forth, they tell you this rule. How come, right, in this Sundown situation, I have not heard anybody, no media outlet whatsoever, bring out the rule that says, okay, if you field a player that's ineligible, here's the punishment. That's all I want to see. For me, as a Pirates fan, I'm now saying that's now two seasons in a row now, right? Because we had the Ndoro situation where he scored against us and we never got compensated for that.
Yeah.
And now I'm looking at it now, Sundowns, you know, fielded an ineligible player against Wits. Mm. And why aren't Wits also making a fuss about it? Because maybe that game could go to them and then they
But wasn't it a case of like they're blaming the small legs being of either that statute of limitation thing Emeka brought up a while back ago, and even the whole thing of it's like it was the match commission agreed. So,
but there's a rule.
Yeah.
I just want to see the rule.
Yeah.
Whether the match commission still has to follow rules.
Yeah.
I agree with you about they have to follow the rules. My problem is just simply, you know, why take so long?
Mm.
You know, because they took so long. Whatever decision they took now would be deemed very unfair, because I mean it would have had a very, very grave impact on the outcome.
Amika, let me ask you a question. Let's take this to Argentina, right? Buenos Aires, okay? If Boca Juniors did this, how long before the River Plate fans arrived there at La Bombonera with petrol and some lighters and burned that stadium down because, you know, they robbed the league title? How long would that happen?
Let's not encourage violence now.
No, I'm not encouraging violence, right? No. All I'm saying is go to Scotland, Hampden Park. How long would it take, right, for that to last if what you call the Celtic?
Okay, that would be Celtic.
Do you know what I mean? How long would it take? So my point is, you know, also for Pirates fans not to be outraged at this, it's ludicrous.
Well, I think maybe that's
ludicrous.
It's it's interesting. It's actually maybe also points to a sign of maturity in that we don't respond to quote-unquote injustices like that anymore.
But could it not be that people just don't know the rule, or maybe there is no rule about a player who's not on the team sheet?
I had conversations with people from different clubs about the same issue, and it would appear like everyone just kind of wanted it
dealt with
in a how would I put it? I think
amicable
way.
8 months, Amika?
Because of how long it's taking. Because if you look at it, you have, you know, I pointed out the last time also that the reason Ajax, Cape Town are where they are today is because they didn't deal with their issue on time, and it came back to bite them, and they ended up being relegated. So for me, I think that the PSL has got to put their act together. They've got to try as much as possible to take a leaf from the Premier League and how and even the English FA, how they deal with issues that come up. The if it comes up, the guilty party or the offending party is cited. They're given a hearing, and the matter is resolved. Resolved. There's a fine, or there's a suspension, or there's point docked. It is dealt with swiftly. You can't wait 8 months. I mean, because of Ajax, how long did it take? It took like the entire season. It was an issue that has to do with registration, which should be their own problem, because surely they must have in their database some tool that alerts them if something irregular is posted there. Same thing with the case of Arendse, because if he wasn't registered to play on that, or rather listed to play on that day, they should have it on their...
Hence I say, can I just see the rules? That's all. I just want to see the rules.
Yeah.
So I can say, okay, they made a decision based on
this. Go and Google the rules.
Yeah, I think I will do that. I think I will do that.
Speaking of Ajax Cape Town, Ajax Cape Town are not coming back into the Absa Premiership next season, because a certain Stellenbosch FC have taken the automatic spot into the Premier League, into the Absa Premiership next season. Relegation, promotion, playoffs coming up in that time. But isn't it amazing that we've got another Western Cape based team coming into the Premier League?
I think it's great for us to see a team there, and also see a team that's not linked to a township.
Sure.
Listen, I covered that game yesterday. Some of the crowd, they don't look like they stay in Stellenbosch. I'm just saying, you know what I mean? Look, it was... you know, when I watched the game yesterday, I think, you know, they only needed to, you know, avoid defeat and hope that Royal Eagles lose, which they eventually did lose. And, you know, it's great for South African football also, I think, to, you know, and I want to broaden this on a racial standpoint, and I hope, you know, I know this is a sensitive issue, but hear what I'm saying, is that I'm a firm believer that, you know, diversity is what makes sports great, okay?
It's also one of the biggest untapped assets of South Africa.
Yeah, you know, I think the diversity in sport is great. I mean, I watched the... I know this is cricket now, the CSA T20 final.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were talking about transformation for all these years. Mm. And I see a Themba Bavuma, captain, who, you know, leads that team, where the team, I think majority, or if there's a 50%, you know, black, white. And they won the whole the whole tournament, right? And I look at Stellenbosch FC, and it's a largely colored-based team, obviously being in the Western Cape. And I think, you know, that opens up, you know, another market into the league. It opens up and brings in another community and brings in another style of play, you know, because when I look at the 96 AFCON team, you know, it was the most integrated team I've ever seen in my life. Black, white, colored, and even Indian, okay? And we win AFCON.
Yeah.
And since then, you know, we've had the token, you know, we've had Matthew Booth, then that's it. Then we, you know, we'll have Furman, then that's it. You know what I mean? I just believe we need to integrate everybody and get styles of play in there. You see it in Spain. They've got the Catalans, they've got the Basque, and they've got the Madridistas, and they go win World Cup, Euro, and so forth. So I think Stellenbosch's rise to the NFD and eventually now to the PSL opens up, you know, that market, and opens up that discussion, because, I mean, some of our best players in our country, hello, Benny McCarthy, hello, Sean Bartlett, hello, Delron Buckley, or Khaled, right? So we need to ignite, you know, the colored communities. Pardon?
Mark Williams.
You know, we need to reignite Quentin Fortune, right? We need to reignite maybe in that community and reignite that fire to say, look, guys, you know, maybe we've kind of sidelined so many races.
Santos used to have
exactly Santos
a good yeah. continuum. Yeah. And some teams like Vasco. But the one thing that I see with that whole arrival there is there's a conversation I had a few years back when Tottenham were here and some of the fans came from Durban. It was the first time I heard from them that there used to be actually an Indian team back in the day that was very formidable. And you know, when I think about how many teams you have from KZN that are in the PSL.
Yeah. And the lack of representation.
We need to find you know, a way to try and as much as possible get more and more demographics from different aspects of society. I mean, my son plays in the LFA here in Gauteng, and every time I go to those games where you know there's under 10, there's under 15, you find a lot of white kids that are very good players. Mm. Now, because some of them have maybe second passports because of their heritage, what happens is that they don't get tracked, and before you know it, a few of them, you know, end up emigrating
to Portugal.
Yeah. There's a lot of them from England and Belgium everywhere, and they go and nobody knows anything about them. Once they're there, unless someone actually digs deep to find where they were born, you probably wouldn't know. I mean, Hans Funk, when he was keeper for South Africa, I remember I spoke to him during AFCON 2000, and he, you know, and I was like, you know, you're Dutch, why do you feel inclined? Because he was born in Johannesburg. He was born in Johannesburg, and that's something that SAFA, the local regional SAFA, and all of the local football associations, they need to find a way to track all of the promising up and coming players. And then, you know, the one thing that shocks me the most, especially for a city like Johannesburg, is that all of the teams that are here, apart from Wits that are in the university, most of them come from the township. Are you saying that there are no kids who play football in Santin? Or kids who don't play football?
I've had that argument who play football for in Fourways, decades.
Who play football in Randburg? You know, you've got Randburg FC.
Now you see,
you've got in Rudiport, you've got a lot of those players. Yeah. So the way to widen the scope for talent and also the diversity of the team is to be able to spread this thing out there. And maybe this is one way, because with Stellenbosch coming through, somebody might decide, okay, look, I need to invest in a team in Sandton, I need to invest in a team in you know, somewhere else in Durban, where you can get maybe some more Indian players. You know, you never know.
I mean, I'll give you an example, right? I know I'm seem to be going off sport, off football to other sports. you look at the NBA. Right, the NBA also made that shift because a lot of the players in the up and early days were coming from the hard courts of the hood or the projects and so forth. You fast forward time now, Steph Curry's not from the hood.
No.
Klay Thompson's not from the hood, right? LeBron James, not necessarily from the hood, right? And those are some of the...
Well, he might disagree. But
What I mean is he's not like, you know, where Allen Iverson and them are, you know what I mean? Like in that back streets, right?
Likes of Allen Iverson...
do you understand what I'm saying?
Those are the guys who come from the core of the project.
Exactly.
And especially... not just the projects, but also the street ball culture.
Yeah,
you know, the street ball culture. It's something that you know came out of you know places like Compton and you know some other
Harlem,
places
New York,
Phillies, and so on. But a lot of them, that culture permeated, you know, even the suburbs where the more affluent people live, because it's with basketball it became more of a lifestyle and a movement that was embraced by everyone. So the football culture here has got to, you know, be more than Cassie flavor.
You are listening to the Pitch Invasion podcast, the podcast for football tribalists.
Well, I think on that note, well done Stellenbosch, Royal Eagles and Milano. They'll be, I think, is Ajax still in play?
No.
So Royal Eagles and Milano United, they'll be contesting the relegation playoff battle there. To link that, Stellenbosch, Benny McCarthy, just one note, Saturday, I was at Huawei Joburg Day. TKZ were performing. They did Ishibobo. I still had goosebumps.
Yeah.
I still had goosebumps.
Still a good song till this day.
I still have goosebumps. And speaking of Bafana Bafana, Itumeleng Nkune is not going to AFCON.
Yes.
Now, what does that do for Baxter's planning? Because obviously there was that contention of like, do you bring him back in, that kind of thing, in spite of his injury? Because now you've got Kun is definitely not coming back. We have Keat, who's on the sidelines at Wits and not playing him because he's not signing a contract. Discussion on who else would make up the three goalkeepers who are going to Egypt for Baxter.
It's been, I mean, we had a lot of drama around some of his choices.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's got to look at it. Darren Keats obviously is going to be number one.
Yeah.
I would go as far as looking for, when Sunderland hasn't had a bad season.
No, he must go.
You know, so you need to bring in someone with experience and someone who's got a presence, who, when the chips are down, I know with Sheikh Mashaba, we had this very weird situation where he played the three AFCON games with three different keepers. We're not going to have...
and also had three goalkeepers on the bench.
On the bench, yeah. So,
remember that.
So, yeah, so we need to look at how we get this team prepared. If you have two good keepers, then maybe there's a chance to throw in, Rowan Williams, maybe.
I think, honestly... you know, the Kune situation, I'm not so sure about his injury, how long-term it is, right?
Yeah.
I think maybe the social media side of Kune maybe dented people's image of him coming. I mean...
No, but if he's not fully recovered, how do you take him to
I don't think he's not fully recovered, to be honest.
But the thing is not going.
He's not going. Yeah. But I think that maybe, you know, because Kune has been up to a lot on social media, so maybe... Some
he's
of
taking
that,
nice pose shots. We like those shots.
Do you know what I mean?
Like,
so maybe some of that has come into play. They're like, hey, you can't take this guy. You know what I mean? And I'm not so sure Kune is that injured that he cannot play. I think maybe there were other forces to do with it.
Okay.
But he's not going. And I think Wayne Sunderland has... Listen, without Wayne Sunderland, Pirates are not even in the discussion for the league title as things stand. So, and he's done a lot to overcome, you know, some of the demons he had last season. And to take that position away from Bojana. So he's done a lot. So I think you have to get him on the plane. And Darren Keat, and, you know, to be honest with you, a third choice keeper, I don't care even if they got him from an indoor team at this point. If you've got the first two goalkeepers are good enough. So.
But what is wrong with Rowan Williams?
Yeah, I can take him if you want. But I mean, the first two, Keat Sunderland, the third one, you know, really, how often does a third choice goalkeeper play anyway?
Now, Banyana Banyana off to France. Great send-off for them for the Women's World Cup. What do you think is a respectable showing for them? Because they're in a tight group. They've got Spain. They've got China.
No, I think it's South Korea or Japan. One of those.
They've got China. They've got China's in the group. Yeah. They've got China. They've got Spain. I think they've also got Germany in their group. So, what's a respectable finish? Banyana Banyana. If you were Desiree Ellis, what are your thoughts around we're going to France?
You know, to be honest with you, I think Banyana Banyana have already won the moral victory. Okay. You know, they made it to the AFCON final.
Yeah.
You know, just were edged out. And Temi Kgatlana, Player of the Year, Desiree Ellis, Coach of the Year, they've won the moral victory. I think anything outside of that, or anything in addition to that, let me say, it's just a bonus, you know, getting to the World Cup, qualifying legitimately, not by hosting.
Yeah.
Hello, Bafana, right? I think to me, you know, puts them up there as just, you know, already national heroes. So, look, I mean, against Germany, I mean, gosh, the German sides at any level, men, women, teenagers, under fives, you know what I mean? Embryos, like they're really lethal. So, it's going to be a tough ask. I mean, Spain... Again, same story. China's women's football is actually really, really good. And I know they invest a lot in women's football. So, you know, for Banyana, if they can at least, you know, get a point of some sort, I think that's a great victory. Because, you know, you've got to look at the context of women's football in the three countries that they're playing up against. We're talking about established professional leagues where women get paid on time, right? As opposed to playing, you know, regional leagues and tournaments and so forth. So you're up against established orders. And I'm sorry to have to say, but Banyana's, you know, just the establishment is not at that level yet. So I think anything, you know, if they get a goal or two, I think that's big. If they get a win, that is massive. That's huge. If they come out of that group, okay, but each and one of those ladies deserve a house on the spot. So I think really anything, to me, you know, they're already national heroes.
Jamaica?
For me, I think that, you know, they've got to try and not lose their first game. If they can get something out of the first game, then, you know, who knows? If they don't go with the mindset that Bafana usually goes, we really look at teams' rankings and look at some of those things. We've seen Bayana play with a free spirit, where they've just had a go at teams. If they don't cage them too much, you know, out of fear, then going to the World Cup for the first time, I think they should just go and have fun. For me, it doesn't matter what the outcome is. Qualifying is a great step. Whatever they'll take out of this tournament will be there. Nigeria, the first time we went to the World Cup, we got hammered by, it was Sweden or so, I can't remember how many goals. And even our best performance in 99, we got to the quarterfinals. We lost our first game to the US by 7-1. But the girls rallied back, and they got something out of it, and then they progressed. They lost even the quarterfinals very narrowly. I think it was to Brazil also. So, you know, the thing is, you've got to instill a certain sense of belief that, you know, you can get something. And for the girls, it's an opportunity for them to maybe should prove that they have something to offer. Maybe they could get good deals as well. So that could be an incentive for them to try and get as far.
And I guess it's a showcase thing for them, for a lot of them as well.
Exactly.
I'm just hoping that a certain Temi Khatlana has an inside track on some of the Chinese players that we're playing against, because she's recently gotten a deal to play in China.
Now I hope they don't pull these stunts. Remember in 2002 World Cup, a player by the name of An Jung-hwan in South Korea, scored the goal that literally sent Italy out.
Yeah.
Came back to his club and they cancelled his contract.
Perugia,
please.
Please.
I hope they don't come with these stunts. If Tembi Khatlana scores the goal that takes China out of the World Cup and goes back, you know, and you know, to like cold reception.
Yeah,
and
we've seen all that before. But look, if Tembi has a chance to score five goals, please go ahead and score those goals, man.
Must score.
If China doesn't want you, England, someone else will want you, so don't look back.
Speaking of England, I'm not going to touch on Liverpool just yet. Ola, Arsenal, Manchester United.
Oh, gosh.
Out of the top four. You know your predictions a couple of months ago, you said Chelsea was going to make it into the top four.
Yep.
And there was a part of me that was like, how can you actually say that? Chelsea are third. Tottenham are
Are fourth. They're fourth. Arsenal are not going to beat any team 7-0. Let's get that straight. Away from home.
A friend of mine sent me one of those, you know, when Facebook, like, a place is now safe.
Yeah.
And he said, top four is now safe from Arsenal getting there.
You know,
and like, my issue is like, why are Arsenal and Manchester United so bad? I don't get it.
To be honest with you, I don't know why Manchester United are so bad, to be honest with you. I cannot honestly come up with answers, especially given the fact that after Solskjaer took over, you know, everything...
They should be pushing on.
Yeah, I say they were gunning for the Champions League as well, you know what I mean? So, and they went in for the FA Cup as well. So, I don't know what happened there. It's really a conundrum for me. I honestly have no answers to it, because it's the same players, the same manager, same system.
With more security.
Nobody's got injuries. And they just, I think they've won two of their last 9 or 10 games in total. Something crazy like that. In Arsenal's case, you know, I'm kind of not surprised, because essentially Unai Emery, you know, I watched Arsenal Fan TV and I know a lot of the guys were on Unai Emery's case. But essentially Unai Emery is still dealing with a lot of Arsene Wenger's players. Do you know what I mean?
Sure, okay.
And he's only had three of his players. You know, three of those players have actually stepped up for Arsenal in the context of the season. Lucas Torreira, Bernd Leno
and
Socrates.
Yeah.
Yeah, Guendouzi hasn't, you know, Guendouzi is a promising player, but I'm talking about the guys that, you know, regularly start. So he's actually done a lot, you know, with those players and also the measly budget that he was given.
Yeah.
And he's got more points than Wenger got last season, and he's got one, you know, foot in the Champions
League. That's saying a lot.
In the UEFA Europa League final. So the guy has done well, irrespective of what people may say. Yes, he was supposed to get into the top four, but I mean, you know, I mean, I look at the Tottenham team. You know, the Tottenham team is, this is a once in a generation team for Tottenham. Teams like that are always going to be good until they get dismantled. So you're not going to easily knock them off their perch, right? Irrespective of whether they did or they didn't spend. And the results that really killed Arsenal was the loss to Crystal Palace and obviously the one on Sunday against Brighton.
Yeah.
And I don't
and
think...
Everton.
You know, that's away from home. Our away form has been bad all year round. So to me, that's just, you know, a dog bites man, right? But the games at home, and I said this to friends of mine. I'm going to give them a shout out, Atletico Fluhoff, right? I play indoor with them. I don't know if I
get
said
get one
this.
Of their goalies to play for Bafana.
Matt, no, right? I think I said this. I know I said this to them. I'm not sure if I said this on his podcast, but Pierre-Emerick, I said it to you as well.
Yeah.
Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is going to score more goals than he's going to win games for Arsenal. Mm. Yesterday culminated in that. He needed to have scored that goal in the last 2 minutes and he fluffed it and he would have won the game and he's failed. I'm sorry. There are so many players at Arsenal that are overrated. And look, I don't know what Emery's budget is going to be because Stan Kroenke is tied with Arsenal for some odd reason. So that's what we have to deal with. But, you know, Arsenal's failures literally have come, I would probably say, you know, those two games specifically, you know, Crystal Palace and Brighton at home, where 4 out of 6 or even 3 out of 6 takes you to the top four and they got one. Disappointment. Gutted.
Now, a certain Loaz isn't here to defend his team or to complain about his team, but even Manchester United, what you call legacy type people, where a certain Aaron Scholes, the son of Paul Scholes, is saying to a player like De Ligt, don't bother coming to Manchester United. Go to Barcelona because we suck.
that was hilarious. I mean, to think that the son of Paul Scholes can go to that extent tells you just how they've dropped. It's quite unfortunate, but that's how the cookie crumbles. Man United, you know, just haven't done a lot. And what I find really funny was is the fact that the team was doing well when Ole Gunnar was there on a rescue mission.
Mm.
The moment he was confirmed as manager, it seemed like something just changed in either the way he approached his methods or the way the players reacted to him. I don't know what it is, but you know, they were fine. They had gotten a good run of results up until even the Champions League the loss coming soon after Ole Gunnar was confirmed as manager. So it's it makes me wonder if it's not a sign that perhaps he was better off just getting the job done and leaving at the end of the season and maybe getting another manager. I don't know.
Now, Emeka, we're not going to dwell on Liverpool because we're recording this podcast before Manchester City play their penultimate game of the season. So we're going to leave the Liverpool-Manchester City league conversation to episode 37, which is going to be after it's all said and done in the Premier League. Now, in the UEFA Champions League, I posed a question earlier to you, and you said maybe I was going ahead of myself. I said, if Ajax reach the UEFA Champions League final, can they beat Barcelona? And you said, you think that Liverpool will come back.
No, I don't think. I'm saying you're already assuming that.
But is it not safe to say this is 3-0 against a 3-0 deficit against a Barcelona team that has an unsung Lionel Messi?
You know, I there were two things. I was working on TV on the day of the AC Milan Barcelona.
Oh, okay.
AC Milan Liverpool game at Istanbul. Yes.
Yeah.
And at halftime, I remember being asked if I thought they could get a result, and I said, you know, if they get an early goal, in the second half. Maybe that could spoil them and they get the second goal. And as long as they don't concede, who knows, anything can happen. I, in my wildest dream, I didn't think it was possible.
Emeka, if Liverpool come back and beat Barcelona, I'm taking you out to dinner. We will take you out to dinner. If Liverpool come back and...
Can I just say this, right? Last year, Barcelona beat Roma 4-1.
Yeah.
So they had a 3-goal advantage, which is the same sort of deficit that they're going into. The difference is this year around is that they have the sort of players now to deal with that sort of high-paced physical sort of style that Roma brought at the Stadio Olimpico, right? And that's what Liverpool are going to give them. I mean, the Arturo Vidal is there.
Yeah.
You know,
Arthur.
Arthur is there. You know, that sort of player to combat that sort of style. And to be honest with you, I've seen Real Madrid with an in-form Cristiano Ronaldo, in-form Bale, Benzema. I don't remember them scoring 4 against Barcelona at the Bernabeu. So... I just don't see. I know Liverpool scored 3 against AC Milan, but they didn't score 4. They need 4 this time. And it's at Anfield.
They don't need four.
Who have Liverpool scored?
They need 3 goals, and then it's game on.
Okay.
And then it's game on. First of all, they have to score 3 to be back in the conversation, and then that's it.
So we need to wrap this conversation up. I'm still going with Ajax, Tottenham, sorry. I think it's going to be Ajax versus Barcelona in the final. Emeka, you're saying...
Liverpool versus whoever, I don't care.
Goodness. Oh, okay. All right. Well, we're going to leave it at that. We know what Tola thinks.
Pitch Invasion is the podcast for football tribalists. To contribute to the show, pose a topic of debate, or just complain about your favorite team, send us a WhatsApp voice note on +27 609 216977. That's +27 609 216977, or send us a text message starting with #PitchInvasion. Remember to follow the Pitch Invasion podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram under the username Pitch Invaded.
Catch episode 37 next week. Lwazi will be back. Enjoy your weekend.
Cheers.